Hello, you're listening to the Red, White, and Brown Report podcast here on redwhiteandbrownreport.com. It's going to be a great episode since Arsenal have finally beaten a big team away from home. What a result, the 2-0 victory over Man City. We're all in a fantastic mood. It was actually one of the best results for Arsenal in recent history. We didn't play our usual flurry tiki-takas. We didn't have a lot of possession on the ball, but we were clinical to score from the chances we got. Good enough to win a penalty, good enough to score from it, score from the set piece again in the second consecutive game, which really does not happen to Arsenal that often. Attacked when we needed to, sat back when we needed to. Santi was absolutely fabulous. Coquelin is our new messiah. Alexis Sanchez didn't try to steal a penalty. Hector Bellerin, Nacho Monreal were, again, excellent fullbacks. Talking about all of that, we have Aman Jain join us again. Aman, what's up?
Hi, mate. How are you?
Good, man. Good. We are... It's been almost, what, 24 hours since the game ended, and we're still as pumped about the game as we were when the game ended. So, hey.
Yeah, it's great. I just fear for the media now that another monkey's off our backs. First, there was the whole talk about no trophies. That went away. Now, no away performance. Now, that went away. What will the media talk about?
Well, what did you think about the game, Aman?
I thought it was a great game. We completely controlled the game. And I think the way the game was going, it was always going to be the one who scores first will kind of be had the upper hand, and we're lucky to score there. So yeah, it's great.
It was wonderful. I mean, we cannot stop talking enough about Super Santa Claus and his feet that are made of magic. Santi dribbled, Santi tackled, Santi crossed, Santi hoofed, Santi won, and of course another player that was super was Francis Coquelin. He basically cock-blocked the entire Man City midfield, and it was just fantastic watching. The entire team was so good, and we were just talking earlier that everyone played with so much desire, and that whole they wanted a victory. It was just fantastic to watch.
The way the match went, and the biggest kind of what showed was the way Santi was just tackling. I mean, he has always been superb dribbling and going forward. But his tackling was another level today. Even towards the end of the middle of second half, he made a tackle right on top of the penalty area. It was just an amazing tackle. I mean, if it had been, say Messi who did that, or even for that matter, Ozil had done that, everybody would have been like, oh. But somewhere I think Santi doesn't get the same kind of appreciation for the same level of skills.
He does not. In fact, I was checking Twitter yesterday right after the game, and it basically was exploding with Santi Cazorla tweets. We know those were the two outperformers. What did you think about Francis Coquelin's performance? Because we've talked about him in the last two or three podcasts now, and he's just been improving since.
I mean, yeah, there's no doubt about that. He has been doing very well. And earlier people said that, oh, it's just Hull, oh, it's only this, it's only Stoke at home, what's the big deal? So, clearly proving his detractors wrong. But having said that, I think it also helps that the whole team is defending well. Now you have Koscielny back, you have Mertesacker back, your fullbacks, Monreal is having an amazing game. It's the whole thing, it's not just Coquelin, probably his job is a little bit easier given the way that the whole team is defending.
Yeah, I mean, before the game, I was reading an article on Football 365, which talked about how Mertesacker is just going to get exposed yet again away from home at City. Aguero is going to run through him and give him nightmares. But I thought Francis Coquelin in front of Koscielny and Mertesacker, it helped a lot, just stabilize the defense. And we talked about this exact same thing last time, too. He was actually asking the players to stick to their positions, yelling at them. This time as well, I mean, I still remember, this was around the 75th minute. Mertesacker tried this whole 1-2 jing with Coquelin, which eventually led to Arsenal losing the ball and a City corner. And Coquelin was fuming his lungs out at the BFG and the Arsenal defense. I mean, such was the impact of his presence to the team yesterday. I honestly thought Coquelin had no future in the Premier League, let alone a future at Arsenal. And now we have four really solid performances from him since being recalled from Charlton. I mean, who would have thought, right?
Yeah, I said, Wenger might claim that he had the faith, but clearly he didn't have the faith. Otherwise, he won't have sent him to Charlton.
Exactly,
but
and
yeah.
I mean, football is always so surprising because if not for Mikel Arteta's injury before the transfer window, I don't think Wenger would have recalled Coquelin from Charlton. And now he's actually had the best game he's ever played in his life. This whole cosmic luck, it's so inherent to football. It's just crazy. And yeah, we probably would have never seen Coquelin again.
That's how it goes. I mean, that's how Ashley Cole's career started. Gilberto got, or not Gilberto, I think Lauren was out, or
yeah,
it was Lauren who got out, and then they needed a left back, and then Ashley Cole never looked back. So it's always that chance. If you take your chances.
I think it's also worth spending some time talking about how unconventional this performance was from Arsenal. First time since Opta actually began tracking stats, this was the lowest possession play by Arsenal in any game. That's spanning across 11 years of football played under Arsene Wenger. We've never seen such low possession. We talked about this during the Liverpool game as well, which sadly was a 2-2 draw, but Arsenal were excellent in the first half without the ball.
Yeah, I mean, we were very good without the ball. But I think, in general, this has been the template for all our away games this season. We played the same way against Chelsea. We more or less played similarly against Liverpool, where we defend relatively narrow and leave the wings open. But I was checking on who scored the average positions of the players. And this game and the Chelsea game, we are not that different. The main difference, I guess, was the fact that we managed to score first this time. And so then we could fall back even. I mean, we were more comfortable since we scored. While against Chelsea, obviously, they scored first, and then we had to go out more. And I remember even in that game, there was one great chance that Jack Wilshere had, and he missed that. It was a sitter almost. Had Jack scored that game, who knows?
So you think the biggest difference was Arsenal scoring first? You're saying we played a very similar style in all those away games this season, except Arsenal scored first this time, and that made the big
exactly,
difference.
Yeah. Because the moment you score, then the game changes completely. And I think that's what Wenger also said, that this time we scored first, and that changed the game.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference also was we didn't have Matthew Flamini or Mikel Arteta in the defensive midfielder role. And both our wingbacks had a great game. Hector Bellerin, I mean, what is making that guy click so much?
But at the same time, I think it was an easier game for them too, for the fullbacks, because they didn't really bomb forward that much. The usual problem when other fullbacks play with for us is that they have to cover a lot of space. And yesterday, they were largely in a defensive role. They didn't really venture out that much, although Monreal did get the penalty.
And like we mentioned, right, I mean, Arsenal were excellent in the first half without the ball. It's not our usual style of playing. We weren't great and flowery on the ball like we always like to. There's some sloppy passing in good situations, and we probably should have created more chances. But defensively, they were very solid and made use of Aguero's lack of match fitness. I thought Aguero was extremely poor. David Silva was being marked extremely, extremely, extremely well by Coquelin. There were a couple of instances where I think Match of the Day covered this, where he constantly kept turning back to David Silva to look at where his positioning was. And he was cutting those balls from Fernandinho. And it just helped the entire Arsenal defense. Ramsey was holding the ball too, along with Coquelin in the first half. But I actually thought he was wasting too much time on the ball. He got tackled a couple of times by the City defense. It could have led to a couple of disastrous situations. But, you know, he was playing silly passes all too often today. That was all in the first half. He came out for the second half as a completely changed player. He tried to curb his natural instinct of going forward, which, to be honest, I think he should more often, especially with Alexis Sanchez in the team and Sandy Cazorla. So in the second half, he stayed along with Francis Coquelin for the most part of the game. And sometimes as a midfielder, it's tough to do that, but it helped the team immensely.
Yeah, I think it was also partly was a bit rusty in the first half and having not played for a while now. He grew into the game. So, yeah, and it's tricky with Ramsey because you do want him to go too, because he's one of the few midfielders that we have who actually can score when they are in a good position. But at the same time, you're right, you need someone to kind of be just sit back and take the pressure. So it's a bit tricky with him.
It's a bit tricky for Arsene Wenger. So now that Ozil is back on the bench, Santi Cazorla is playing the way he is. Alexis Sanchez, obviously we know what he can do. It's so surprising we haven't really talked about Sanchez this entire game. Who do you think is the best Arsenal player in that central midfielder role?
Santi is not exactly playing in the number 10 role which Ozil plays. He's playing more central midfielder, not attacking midfield. So I don't see Ozil replacing Santi in that role.
But do you think Santi's role as a midfielder and the freedom that he gets up front in the field?
So they will then have to change that. Then Wenger will have to go back to his 4-2-3-1 compared rather than 4-1-4-1, which he's playing right now. And I don't see that happening, because I think this has been at least in the away games, it has been a conscious choice of playing 4-1-4-1. So it might be that they might play a slightly more attacking version of it with Ozil slightly further up in the home games, and in the away games he kind of jiggles around. But most likely than not, I think Ozil will has to kind of come on the flanks again, either right or left, whichever one. But I don't see him starting in the center.
I don't think he'll be too happy with that, but I guess you cannot replace Santi Cazorla with the way he's been playing at all.
Just the way this formation, he can't do that role, the role Santi is doing right now. Ozil can't do that role, because it needs, like Santi showed, it needs a lot of tracking back, it needs a lot of tackling. You can't just be a full-time attacker in this role.
And also a lot of energy, which Ozil sometimes seem to lack.
Yeah, I mean, the energy thing, I think, is more of a impression that he gives, because I remember there were some statistics thrown around when people said that he wasn't running, but he used to be still the highest runner or number of miles covered kind of thing.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So it's a bit of an impression thing, that because he just looks like that. So it's not so much about the running, but it's just that, I can't see him tackling the way Santi was tackling yesterday. Santi was like a man possessed rough yesterday.
Yeah. Well, so how much of this performance was Arsenal playing really well versus City being completely wasteful? Because City were absolutely horrendous in the first half. The kind of defending, you'd expect a team like Arsenal to probably defend like that. But Vincent Kompany had a nightmare. And I actually think he should have been sent off for that second tackle on Alexis Sanchez towards the, I think it was the 70th minute. The first penalty, a lot of people say it was soft. I think I would agree with them that it was soft. Did Nacho Monreal make most of Vincent Kompany's challenge? He probably did. Did he have the right to go down? He did. Did he go down too easily? Maybe. Maybe he went down a little too easily. But Vincent Kompany definitely had the intention of blocking Monreal's run.
Exactly, and I don't think so at all that he went down easily. I think very clearly he put his kind of knee, he acted as if he wasn't doing it. He was kind of being sneaky about it. But it was very clear that he wanted contact, and he put his knee on his path. And I didn't feel at all that actually Monreal went down easily. He was kind of at a decent pace. And I mean, to me, it didn't seem like a soft penalty at all. For me, it was 100% definitely.
Yeah, the jury's still out on whether Arsenal players dive or not. I think this is the first time we've talked about an Arsenal player dive, like quote-unquote dive, but we don't really associate
it. Other occasions, like I think last season, Santi had dived once.
It was
Wenger had accepted that. And that was quite a clear kind of a dive, and I don't think Santi had done that since then.
Yeah, so typically Arsenal players don't really have a reputation of diving, though. Which is good. Which is what making defending a football team like this, it makes it a little more easier than maybe Chelsea.
But coming back to City's performance, I think City has never been like defensively a great team. They have always worked on the philosophy that you score two, we score three kind of a philosophy. Not necessarily that we just going to keep it tight and not kind of on attack or anything. They are an attacking team by default. And I think they're just a good time to play them because, I like you said, Aguero was coming back out of injury, not at his peak. We managed to block Silva out very well out of the game. And Nasri, the other usual creative outlet sometimes is Nasri. Nasri was injured. They didn't really have that many options, and Yaya was away on AFCON. So if you look at their personnel, they didn't really have their usual creative kind of core, wherein if you just kind of ensure that Silva doesn't get on the wall, you have kind of curtailed them.
Having said that, we've been absolutely atrocious the last 4 or 5 years playing all these big teams. I think the last time we won was through that Mikel Arteta half volley at home versus City as well. That was the last time I remember Arsenal beating a big team.
That was at home.
That was at home. That was at home. Yeah, I remember. And I think it was the 2012 season when Arsenal won 1-0 at the Emirates, and everyone was like, oh, this is the last of City's title challenge. And Aguero's heroics won them the title that year. But City were poor the entire game. Their defending was absolutely atrocious, like we mentioned before. The defending for the second goal, Lampard had just come onto the field. He had no idea who he was tracking. And Giroud, Alexis Sanchez both had an easy run
And Koscielny, I
on
think it could
Koscielny as
easily have been
well.
any, all three of them could have easily scored there.
Also, what a great delivery by Santi Cazorla, yet again.
To me, it didn't seem like it, but like the on Sky, they were asking Santi if he kind of spotted that Man City wasn't ready and took the free kick quickly, and therefore kind of caught them. But to me, it didn't seem like he took it quickly. It was just like a normal free kick. It wasn't like he suddenly, like, immediately took the kick while City was still kind of getting into their positions.
Oh, well, I mean, all in all, it was a really interesting game. Anything else that stood out to you, Aman?
Just that, having said all that, I won't be too surprised if we lose to Brighton next week.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure Wenger's not going to put out a full-strength squad. He might give Ozil, Rozsicki, Ramsey, and maybe Theo Walcott a run in the squad. And obviously, he'll play Bellerin as well, because why not? But actually, Hector Bellerin is proving to be a huge asset here for Arsenal. Soon, once Jenkinson returns back from his loan move, we'll have three really good candidates for the right back role. Do you still think Arsenal should be in the market for a defensive midfielder?
It's hard to say, really. I think defender is a more important and more urgent need.
I still think we are evaluating Francis Coquelin based on very few performances. I think
Even about Kokila, but I think it's just that defender is more needed because we just don't have a backup. I've always maintained that to an extent, defensive midfielder is not as important if. If we play the right way, Flamini, Arteta, Coquelin, they can cope up with it if the team defends well overall. But in terms of defender, it's just absolutely bare right now because we just don't have any players. If either of Koscielny or Mertesacker gets injured, there's absolutely nothing there.
yeah, and talking about other games, like what else stood out to you? Maybe Chelsea won 5-0. I like how Fabregas, Diego Costa, and Oscar all pitched in the game. They were playing some really, really good passes. And Willian obviously can't stop hitting the crossbar, but apart from that, it was really good. Man U again, they were sloppy, and yet again they won another game. Who else? What did you think about the Man U game?
I didn't watch the game, but I was just kind of following it on BBC. It seemed that the first half was again quite with Van Gaal again defending with five defenders against QPR or faulty. I mean, come on, seriously. Till the time actually when Evans got injured after in the first half, then he was almost forced to change his formation, and then he scored almost immediately.
So is Falcao unlucky, or is he just that bad that he probably missed like three or four chances right in front of goal, and it was actually kind of hilarious to watch.
I didn't see it again. I just saw there was one vine which was going on about Falcao, which kind of was in front of the open goal. But I think if you see that replay, then the defender actually gets a slight touch, which takes the ball away from Falcao. So I will give him the benefit of doubt there.
And there was also this crazy rumor that Manu are willing to give Real Madrid $40 million or £40 million, whatever that figure is. I keep mixing the currencies, but they're willing to give them £40 million plus David De Gea for Gareth Bale.
It's ridiculous. Well, never know, but I really doubt.
What are they going to do with so many attacking midfielders? I mean, they can't even play Van Persie, Falcao, and Rooney in the same team, leave alone playing Di Maria and Gareth Bale also on the same team.
I think
it just sounds completely absurd.
The only explanation you can think of is Manu is trying to become a Real Madrid.
And I actually think selling David De Gea, no matter how much I would like it, as an Arsenal supporter, I think it would be terrible for the Premier League and also for Manu. I was in a conversation with another friend. I think they would definitely drop 15, 20 points every season if they didn't have a keeper of the caliber of David De Gea. He's been keeping them in games throughout the season. But yeah. So talking about transfers, have we heard anything about Arsenal other than the usual Mats Hummels?
Well, there were discussion of two defenders today that I heard. There was from, I think, Paulista from Villarreal and another guy from España, both central defenders. Moreno, I think.
And obviously, Arsenal are close to signing the 17-year-old wonder kid from Legia Warsaw, Bilic.
That's almost done. I mean, that has been already announced.
Yeah, it's already been announced. And I've seen a YouTube compilation of his videos, and he looks good, just like any other signing. But I think the timing of this move got the media's attention, because when Arsenal really needed a defensive midfielder and a central defender, when you go out and buy a player like this, like Bellic, who's 17 years old and not even any close to filling in those roles, that's when everyone gets irritated, because people are like, oh, Wenger should be buying someone else, but he bought him. But this was a move for the future.
Normal regular thing to do. I remember the same issue was there when he bought Chamberlain. Everybody was like, what the fuck? Why are you buying another Southampton kid? The thing is, if you're Arsenal, you know you can't compete with a City or a Chelsea. You have almost no choice but have to find some younger people who you can buy before they become stars. Because you know once they are stars, you will be outbid more often than not.
So,
lasting bit was probably I was hoping Yaya Sanogo will score for Crystal Palace, but wasn't to be. Hopefully soon.
He started the game, and Dwight Gayle had a brilliant game too. So did Jason Punchin. So are they going to be the new attacking pair, like Yaya Sanogo and Dwight Gayle are going to be the next terror in the Premier League, just like, what was that face? Robbie Keane and Dimitar Berbatov a few years ago.
Or maybe the Andy Cole and Dwight York.
Andy Cole and Dwight York. I hated that pair too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about the second half of this season, because I have always thought that we would play far better in our second half of this season than we had in the first half. So I'm quite looking forward to how this team develops. I think we do have the basic things in this team to challenge for the title. I mean, not this year is obviously difficult, but it has the ingredients that if they can build on it.
So who do you think is going to finish third and fourth?
I think third. And fourth will be probably United.
Oh, so Southampton's getting dropped out of the top four.
They'll struggle. I mean, people have been saying, and I've been thinking that for the whole season, so they might easily surprise us again. But I mean, generally, the history has always been that teams are not able to last the whole season, even if they do well in the first half. I remember 2 years or 3 years back, Newcastle was supposedly going to be in the Champions League races, but then eventually they dropped out.
But that again was Newcastle and Alan Pardew. But I'm actually cautiously positive about Southampton. I think they've signed well in the transfer window. I think if there's any team that has potential to break this current top four trend. I think it's Southampton. I could be proved wrong, but
let's see. I mean, I hope Southampton does qualify. It would be great, like for football and for Premier League, etc. But fingers crossed. Let's see. And I think United, I don't know. It's they kind of Van Gaal is. I feel that he's kind of just solidifying his position. He's just ensuring that he doesn't lose too many games. If whether he wins them, anything that he will always make a goal here and there to win it finally. So that's why he's kind of very defensive-minded kind of game that he's playing.
So we've talked about predictions. We've talked about the Arsenal defense. We've talked about a solid performance by Cotelan and Santi Cazorla. It was a very Chelsea-esque performance by Arsenal. All in all, a really exciting, very good weekend for Arsenal and, of course, Chelsea. But yeah, Aman and I will see you in 2 weeks. You can still follow us on RWB Report on Twitter. And you can also follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/RWB Report. You can log on to www.redwhiteandbrownreport.com. Thanks again for joining us for this amazing, amazing week where Arsenal were absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, cheers to that. And hopefully we go on a good run and develop on this performance.
You're right. We sure hope they do. Thanks again for listening.